All right, welcome back to the second part of our Mystery of Music presentation tonight. Now, I remember when I was a bit of a younger kid, like only like 5 years ago or 6 years ago, when after I'd left school and stuff like that, we used to go out and we used to party, we used to go to different nightclubs and different things like that. And I remember this one time before we would actually go out to go nightclubbing, or not one time, sorry, every time pretty much. We would all sit down and we wouldn't have too much to do. We'd just be drinking and we'd just put on, my friends had Foxtel at the time, and we'd put on MTV and we'd begin to watch it. And especially when you're drinking and stuff like that, that kind of music really pumps you up. And it gets you excited. If the clips are playing something that's really exciting, you get excited. If they're playing something cool, you start to feel really cool. And yeah, then we'd go out. And it wasn't until I actually kind of left that scene and became Christian and a Seventh-day Adventist once again, that I began to wonder just why this music was so powerful, and especially shows like MTV, why they were so powerful. So far in our presentation, we've looked back a bit on my past and where I came from and why music played such a big role in my life. We've looked at the origins of the music industry, or just we touched on it. And now we're going to take a look at the modern day music industry. As we saw in our last presentation, we noticed that the music industry of the old time, you could say, was filled with the occult and black magic and all these people that claim to have sold their soul to the devil in basically trade for fame and fortune. But what about the modern day music industry? Do the same things like that happen these days? Or have we become more civilized, let's just say? Well, that's what we're going to have a look at. And you'd be surprised what the answer is. As you can see, here we have a picture of just a average MTV kind of scenario. MTV is watched by nearly every single young person of today, you could say. It's a very popular show. It was amazing because PTC actually did a study on it, and that's the Parent Television Council. And they found that 73% of boys and 78% of girls between the ages of 12 to 19 actually watch this show. So picture that. 73% of probably your children, your boys, your girls out there, watch this show. Pretty amazing. It must be a powerful show. In this big study that they did, they found, and this was over 171 hours of this programming, they found 1,548 sexual scenes, 3,056 depictions of sex or nudity, 2,881 verbal sexual references, 1,518 uses of unedited and foul language, 1,068 acts of violence, and four times the amount of sexual content than the commercial television stations and shows. So, as you can see, there's a lot of stuff that goes on these shows that you wouldn't want your children to watch. And especially since sometimes we're very strict on the programs on TV our children watch. But do we allow them to watch MTV? Do we think it's just harmless music? Do we allow them to watch shows like Video Hits and the Australian versions of those things where they play this music? Well, that's a lot of junk that goes into the mind. Here's a very interesting logo that MTV has on one of its commercials. As you can see, they've got an apple there with the core bitten out. And then they've got a little serpent that makes up the T and the V. Could MTV subtly be hiding in their shows something? Maybe who they worship? We'll have a look. Bob Pittman said, "At MTV, we don't shoot for the 14-year-olds. We own them." So that's a nice statement. Just picture, he's saying that he owns your children. And as you saw from that study, MTV has an incredible amount of power over the youth and influence. So maybe he isn't too far from the truth. Now, why don't we have a look at some of these artists that are on MTV, and not only just on MTV, that span all throughout the modern day music industry. And we'll see what they actually are involved in. Here's a quote from Tori Amos. She says, "Music is the most powerful medium in the world. You're hitting places in people." So even these artists acknowledge that music is a powerful thing. And they even use the word medium here. Here we have a quote by Jimi Hendrix. He goes on to say, "I can explain everything better through music. You hypnotize people. And when you get people at their weakest point, you can preach into their subconscious what we want to say." It's a very interesting quote. It's a very popular quote used by a lot of people, and you may have heard it before. But the question is, what is this message that he's saying that we preach into their subconscious? Could it just be, hey, follow us and be cool like us? Or is there something deeper behind this? Here's an interesting quote by the Rolling Stone magazine. They said, "The main thing is to get the kids, now you when you're young, and brainwash you. Then they've got you for the rest of your life." So these people are perfectly aware of how much power and influence they have over the children. Well, let's take a look at some of these different artists and see just what kind of influence these artists have. Because it may be good and all that MTV has a lot of control, but the focus here is on what kind of music is actually going into your children and into your youth and sometimes into, yeah, the adults. Like, everyone's into music these days. So here is one example of a gentleman called Marilyn Manson. I don't know if you could call him a gentleman, but yeah. Marilyn Manson is one of the, you could call him one of the biggest cult rockers of today. And since so many youth are into music like this, it is very vital for us to take a look and just see what people like Marilyn Manson are into, what they believe, and what they try to teach through their music. It's very interesting. When Marilyn Manson actually gets up at a concert, do you know what he does? Here's a picture of him tearing up Bibles on the stage. When he gets up there, he tears them up and he blasphemes God. And it's amazing, even on their stages, don't their platforms where they're supposed to be doing a rock concert look like a preacher's pulpit? It's just very interesting to know. And on that picture back there we saw, on the previous one, we saw a little logo on his little pulpit and it says, "Antichrist Superstar." So do people like him have a message to preach? I believe they do. Here we have a quote by Marilyn Manson. He says, "I could use black magic to turn the lowly lot life around that was given to me, to attain a position of power that other people would envy and accomplish things that other people couldn't." Now, Marilyn Manson has a very interesting story. You see, when he was a child, he wasn't a popular kid or anything like that. But one day he heard about a rock star that had made basically a blood pact, and I think one of his friends even made a blood pact as well, which is basically you're just taking some of your blood and you're making a covenant with Satan for him to make you famous, and on behalf of it you're selling your soul to him. But Marilyn Manson, in his own story, admits that he did this when he was young. And as you can see, the fruits of it now are that he's a big famous rocker. And yeah, here's just a little quote that just shows him that how he kind of went in that direction. Marilyn Manson goes on to say, "When we reach the age of reason, the age of Horus, we can no longer be what our parents, our God, our society would like us to be. Maturity, sensibility, rebellion, 15. This is when we fall. This is Lucifer." Now, what age group was MTV aiming at? They were aiming at the younger children, weren't they? Now, I remember in the Bible, when Christ was a little boy, it was at the age of 12 that he actually came into the synagogue and began discussing all the Bible doctrines. I wonder if it's possible, if it could be, that around that age, around the age of 12 to 15, these artists, and of course Satan knows that if you get the kids at this age, then you can get them, and most likely he can claim them from ever since that age for the rest of their life. So it's interesting just how these big shows aim for the young kids. And even Marilyn Manson knows to go for kids around the age of 15, because this is when they're most easily taken in that kind of field. Here's another artist, Noel Gallagher. Just like we saw in the whole of the olden day music industry, he says, if the devil popped up now and said, it's a choice, musical relationships, be it mother, girlfriend, even Liam, I'd sign on the dotted line. Just another little example of these artists claiming that they've sold their soul. Is there more to this? Is there actually something behind it, or is this just words? Well, so far you've seen so many examples of it, so I'll leave that up to your own speculation. Here is another very popular rock group called Metallica. Now Metallica, it's just amazing how so many of these artists, even back from 20, 30, 40 years ago, are still in the music scene. And as soon as they release a CD, they sell millions, and they're always so popular. Do you think there could be more behind their fame and fortune than meets the eye? Well, let's just take a quick look at their lyrics and see. Here is one of their songs. And in this song they sing, angel from below, change my dreams. I want for glory's hour, for wealth's esteem. I wish to sell my soul, to be reborn. I wish for earthly riches, don't want no crown of thorns. Now, you can tell from these artists that they know scripture to some extent, and they know what they're doing. And all I actually feel for these people, because here he says he doesn't want no crown of thorns, and they don't realize on that day of judgment, when God comes, how much they're going to regret saying this. Whether they just say it for just popularity's sake, or if they're actually into occult and spiritualistic kind of stuff, or if they're just saying it for no reason at all. But the thing is, on that day of judgment, they're going to regret saying these things. Here's some more lyrics. I don't care for heaven, so don't you look for me to cry, and I will burn in hell from the day I die. You have to feel sorry for them. Anyway, we're going to focus on a few mainstream artists, some really big names that have come through the music industry recently. One of these people is Carlos Santana, and I'm sure everyone here has heard of him and maybe even heard some of his music before. Carlos Santana has an interesting story as well. You see, Carlos was a famous musician back in the days, back in the 70s and 60s and stuff like that. And he disappeared for a while. Then suddenly in the last 5 or 6 years, he just pops back up out of the scene, and the first album that he releases again is one of the biggest albums of all time, and it was winner of Album of the Year at the 42nd Grammy Awards. And it just makes you wonder, why do these artists just, especially these artists back from the old days, just keep on popping up and keep on making it successful? That's why we need to look deep into some of these people's lives and just have a better look. Now, here's just something interesting that I just thought I'd add in. Here's the name Santa Claus. And if you look at the translation of Santa, it's basically a scrambling of Satan. And then if you look at the name Claus, it's actually the old English word for hoofclaw, aka, in other words, a split hoof or a goat. So really, subtly in there, it's Satan the goat. Now, I'm not dissing Christmas here or anything, but I'm just using this example to show you the same thing with Carlos Santana's name. Here is the translation for his name. If you look at his first name there, Carlos, it actually means strong. And then Santana, if you just have a look there, you can see the name Satan hidden in there. So is there a message there that's trying to be subtly given? Maybe who he's really, his allegiance is really to? I'll leave that up to your speculation. But Carlos Santana made it successful once again. And here he actually goes on to tell us how about he became successful again. He says, "I know it sounds new age, but in my meditation, this entity, which is called Metatron, he said, we want to hook you back to the radio airwave frequencies. We want you to reach junior high schools and universities. Once you reach them, because we are going to connect you with the best artists of the day, then we want you to present to them a new menu. Let them know that they are themselves multi-dimensional spirits with enormous possibilities and opportunities. We want you to present them with a new form of existence that transcends religion, politics, or the modus operandi of education today. This country was founded on a Bible in one hand and guns in the other." So isn't that amazing? Here he says that when he was in his meditation, and the story goes like this, he was meditating one day, and then suddenly this spirit being just comes to him and starts telling him that he's going to make him famous again, that he's going to plug him back up to the airways and basically make him popular throughout universities and amongst young people. Here he goes on to say, "This entity wanted me to know I would be hooked up with the right writers, musicians, and producers for the purpose of reaching high school and college kids. So my inner instructions were clear. Eric Clapton wanted to know if he could play on the album. All the people who played on the record said they heard my music before I called them, or that I appeared in their dreams or something. They knew what was coming before they got the call." Now this is exactly what happened. Carlos Santana began receiving these meditations from this entity saying that he was going to hook him back up to the airways. Then suddenly, when he was starting to write his music and get everything together and they were ready to start filming, he then began calling all these people. And all these people, Eric Clapton for one example, all these people started having dreams, or they started hearing his music in their head, and there were just all these really supernatural occurrences that started happening. And it even makes you wonder the title of the album, Supernatural. Here Carlos Santana says, "There's an invisible radio that Jimi Hendrix and Coltrane tuned into. And when you go there, you start channeling other music." Have you ever wondered where some of these artists actually get their music from? I was watching this interview one day from Carlos Santana. And on the interview, this reporter's actually talking to him and asking him, "Oh, how do you go about playing so well? Like, you have such a vibrant presence on stage." Carlos Santana then goes on to explain. He said that what I basically do is I just loosen myself and I just allow basically the spirit to play me. And Carlos Santana said that sometimes he's actually watching himself on his own concerts and video clips, and he doesn't even recognize or remember himself playing up there. So my question is, what is really playing him? Where is this music coming from? Does music like this, even music that has a really light influence, doesn't seem like it's too corrupt or anything like that, is there some kind of secret message that is going in the background that is trying to be preached to everyone? Here Carlos Santana says, "You meditate and you got the candles, you got the incense, and you've been chanting, and all of a sudden you hear this voice, 'Write this down.' Who do you think that voice is?" Well, remember, there are only two parties, God and Satan. And I really don't believe somehow that this is from God. Carlos Santana says, "When I let the Spirit play me, it's an intense delight. My role as a musician is to make everyone aware of his own divinity." Here we have the same sin that caused Adam and Eve to fall, being brought back into basically pop culture, subtly through the music that Carlos Santana here is producing. And that's the message he's trying to give, to get everyone to remember their own divinity. And we know that's the exact reason why Adam and Eve fell, because Satan said, "You will become like gods." In the Rolling Stone magazine in 2000, he says, "Metatron wants something from me, and I know exactly what it is. The people who listen to music are connected to a higher form of themselves. It's a personal invitation from me to people. Remember your divinity." There we have that same Luciferian language again. So do artists like Santana have an agenda? I believe they do. Well, is this just related to the whole kind of grunge rock kind of scene? Or does it extend outside that? Let's have a look at some other well-known artists from the whole hip-hop and rap scene. And you'll see, we'll see the same thing over and over again. Has everyone here heard of Eminem? Yes, some have, some haven't. Well, Eminem was a big rap star. You could say he was one of the first really big white rap stars to come on the scene. And I was very heavily into his music when I went through my rebellious stage when I was younger. Now, he's not just some little figure as well. As you can see, Eminem, he broke the record by selling 1.6 million albums within a week. So the kids love him in America. So he's not just some little musician star. So what kind of role model is Eminem to all these kids that he sells his music to? What kind of fruits does Eminem show? Here are some of his lyrics. He says, "Follow me and do exactly what the song says. Smoke weed, take pills, drop out of school, kill people and drink." Some role model, huh? And you wonder why there are so many shootings amongst young kids these days. Eminem actually said in one of his SMS messages that he sent, which was published, he said, "I'd be lying if I said I didn't think I was a role model to kids. Kids look at me like I'm a god." So even people like Eminem know how much power and influence they have over these kids. But regardless of that, they still make sure they preach such a harsh message to these kids and get them to rebel as much as they can. And here's a little quote underneath there saying, by a bunch of street kids, you could say. They said, "Eminem's our Christ. We party in his name." Now, people like Eminem have a lot of power amongst the youth. And there was actually this time where, I think Eminem, he committed some kind of crime. I'm not too sure on the details. But the people in the court actually brought him in and they started to do the trial and stuff like that. And all the kids in the community began to rebel and they said, "If you don't release Eminem, we're going to start tearing up the town, we're going to start burning things and rioting." So eventually they let him off. Where's justice these days? Here's another SMS message that was published. He said, "They're into hurting themselves. They're cult people, devil worshippers, who say I'm right next to Satan in their thoughts." Yes, okay, Eminem. Here we have another example of another rapper called Eazy-E. Now, not too many people, maybe not here in Australia, have heard of him, but he was a really big rapper in America and back in kind of the 80s and 90s, and I believe he actually died of AIDS now, which is a shame because who knows if he ever found Christ. But I'm going to show you a little example how a lot of these people actually have, like, they're in the know. They don't just say they're into occult things and they're into satanic things. They actually have quite a bit of knowledge about all of this, and we're going to have a look and see why. Easy Ian, in one of his songs, actually sings, "Heaven in art, which Father our Father which art in heaven." Now, it wouldn't seem like much to the untrained eye, because and most of you will know that this is a verse out of Scripture. But it's very interesting what he actually does to this verse in Scripture, especially in that first line where he sings it in reverse. Now why is this so important? What difference does it make? Well, Aleister Crowley, who was one of the major occultists of the 19th century, actually wrote in his book, "Let him learn to write backwards, walk backwards, listen to phonograph records reversed. Let him practice speaking backwards. Let him read backwards. So these people subtly hide these things in their music. They basically admit to those who are in the know in the occult and stuff like that who they're really worshipping through these subtle little hints. And one thing, why do they brag about these things or hide them? Well, you just have a look. Satan has always been a bragger ever since creation. And he has always tried to exalt himself, and he tends to hide it a lot these days, but he still has to put that one little bit in there just to try to brag. But this is just a subtle way how Eazy-E actually showed what he was into. And he was obviously into a lot of Aleister Crowley and occult teachings. And if anyone has ever seen the testimony of Roger Morneau, they would know that when Roger Morneau actually went to a lot of the temples that he would go to, where they would actually be actively involved in satanic worship, into the actual rooms they'd go into, they would actually sing hymns backward. And this was actually a form of blasphemy for God, or against God, and that's why they'd do it. So here, Eazy-E is subtly blaspheming God. Here's another big artist for our time, Snoop Dogg. And I know a lot of kids have heard of him, and he has a lot of influence in the MTV kind of community. He's always on there, he's always promoted in commercials, in parties, and all those kind of things. So he's not just some little player. Everyone kind of likes Snoop Dogg. Even people who are into rock like Snoop Dogg in America. Here's just one of his album covers. Now it's very interesting, it's subtle, but once again we have this hidden game, and we have this pyramid shape, and on top of the actual pyramid is a serpent. Now if you know occult teachings, they actually teach that basically this earth, you could say, Satan's kingdom, is basically a pyramid structure, and on the top there's an all-seeing eye, and that's basically Lucifer, or a symbol of Lucifer. And here, in Snoop Dogg's album, he's subtly saying the same thing. But let's have a deeper look. Here we have one of Snoop Dogg's video clips. And it's interesting if like you ever see the video clip, which I don't recommend anyway, but in this video clip it's a picture of Snoop Dogg, and he's actually, something happens to him and he's in a hospital bed, and then suddenly this being appears above him and whispers into his ear, and he kind of shakes his head. And as this being's whispering into his ear, he sees a picture of him in a mansion, and he's in a spa with all these girls, and then suddenly when he shakes his head, this being then brings a sheet to him and he signs on it. Then suddenly, instantly, he appears at this place, and he's suddenly owning all these mansions, and he's got all these girls around him. And that's taken from this video clip. But in there he pretty blatantly shows that he's selling his soul. But in the video clip here, we see a Bible, or I don't know if it's a Bible or an altar or whatever it is, but there's an upside down cross on it. Now, what's the importance of this? Well, here we have it from Professor J.S. Mallon. He actually says, "This cross is not broken, but turned upside down. It indicates the rejection of Jesus Christ and contempt for the gospel of salvation." So does Snoop Dogg secretly know who he's really worshipping? Yeah. It's a shame. So many artists are like this, and so many of these artists could use their gifts and their talent for the glory of God, but they don't. And We see millions of kids just falling aside, falling in the wayside, because they follow and they worship these artists and these stars. Another artist, once again, another modern big name rapper of our time, DMX. And just an interesting title he's got there, Darkman X. I'm sure that's more or less to do with his skin color than the title, because they all have these satanic connotations underneath everything that they say. Here in his lyrics, he actually goes on to say, "Since I run with the devil, I'm one with the devil. I sold my soul to the devil. The price was cheap." So once again, another example. What about the more tame type of music? I bet you're saying now, surely not these guys. Well, it's amazing because when groups like all these whole boy band scenario came out and people like Backstreet Boys and NSYNC came out, there was a big sigh of relief amongst parents. They were saying, finally, something that our kids can listen to which seems wholesome and seems nice. But is it really wholesome? Or once again, are we going to see the same thing? Here's a quote from Express Rider in 1998. It says, "Their focus is on good morals." So we're about to see how really good their morals are. Now, an interesting little fact. The average age of the Backstreet Boys is 27 to 30 years old. And the average age of their fan is 12 years old. So what kind of message are these harmless boy bands giving to the children? Let's have a look. Here's an article from Entertainment Weekly where they go on to say, in regards to the Backstreet Boys, that they sing a ludicrous line, "Am I sexual? Hordes of 8 to 15 year old girls clutch their throwaway cameras and scream their braces off. Another night, another 10,000 sexual awakenings." So they have a big influence on the kids, don't they? But I just want you to have a look at this one set of lyrics that they sing about. And this will show you just some of the stuff they're actually preaching to the children. They say, "You always push me away. You tell me it's much too soon. But I just can't help it. I'm always going to lose control. I hear you saying, I think we should wait. I can't hold on anymore. My body is calling for you, so please don't hesitate. No, you know I gotta do what I gotta do, baby." What do you think that's singing about? It's basically singing about sexual immorality. And remember what the age of their fan base is? 12 years old. So anyone here have any like 12-year-old children? Yeah? Yeah, a few? Well, just think about it. These are the lyrics they're basically preaching to those children. And you wonder why teenage pregnancies are so high these days and why so many youth are just into sexual immorality in such a great scale and things like AIDS is so great. And here's another example, NSYNC. NSYNC was basically the younger brothers, you could say, of the Backstreet Boys. They were, there was this guy called Uncle Phil, and he was the guy who basically produced all the boy bands. And after Backstreet Boys began to, their profits started to fizzle down, he thought, hang on a sec, why don't I release another group? And that's where NSYNC came from. So, is NSYNC any different to the Backstreet Boys? Here we have Rolling Stone magazine. They actually go on to say that NSYNC has much darker stuff, like teen horror movies and grunge, brimming with pent-up tensions of teenhood, burbling hormones and unbearable overwhelming feelings. Okay. Well, let's see what kind of lyrics they're preaching to their audiences. And this is very interesting, just what they say in here, because this is supposed to be just casual lyrics that are getting the kids like all happy to dance and boyfriend-girlfriend kind of stuff. But there's actually a much deeper message, even in these tame groups, you could say. Here's the lyrics for one of their songs, Space Cowboy. They sing, "Here it comes, millennium, and everyone's talking about Jerusalem. Is this the beginning or the beginning of the end? Well, I've got other thoughts, my friends. We don't need all these prophecies telling us what's a sign. Leave your doubts and your fears behind. Now I ask you this. What are those prophecies that are they talking about? What are the prophecies that they're saying that they don't need? What are these signs? It's the Bible, it's Scripture. Here, in a very subtle way, this group is basically saying, we don't need the Bible. Just leave your doubts and your fears behind. Now, it just goes to show that you can never judge a book by its cover. Even groups that seem so innocent like that can have their agendas. And that's why it's so important for every single music thing we listen to. We need to look into the lyrics. We need to look behind the artists themselves and what they're into, what they're involved into. And we need to look at these things ourselves. Because a lot of times there's always a lot of baggage under the carpet, you could say, that they don't like people seeing. What about girl groups? Here we have the Spice Girls, and I'm sure everyone has heard of them sometime. What are they seeing? Are they any different? Here's some of their lyrics. In their song, When Two Become One, they sing, be a little bit wiser, baby. Put it on, put it on. 'Cause tonight is the night where two become one. What do you think they're talking about there? Well, they're basically teaching their young fan base how to use condoms. Now, the scary thing about, especially a group like Spice Girls, is they've got an even younger fan base than the Backstreet Boys and NSYNC. Their fan base starts at probably age 5, 6, maybe even age 4 and goes up. And just take a look. This was one of the, a particular, it was like a audience interactive kind of thing where they had a lot of kids around them, and most of these kids were aged from between the age of 8 to 15. And they were all spread out around them, and this is the actual song that was being sung to them. These are the lyrics for it. It was, do what your mama said, I will not be told. Keep your mouth shut, keep your legs shut. Who cares what they say? Because rules are for the breaking. Who made them anyway? Make your own rules. Now, how many commandments are actually being broken in this one song that is being taught to these young kids? To disobey your family, your parents. Who made the rules anyway? Who made them? God. So they're not only blaspheming, but they're breaking the first, second, and third commandments. So this is what is getting taught to the kids. And once again, I have to emphasize, do not judge a book by its cover, because you need to, everything your kids listen to, you need to examine it and see what is actually being said. Because a lot of the time, Satan has subtly put these things in there just to try to corrupt your children. That's why it's so important. Another example, Britney Spears. What's some songs that she sings? Here she sings this line, I bet you we can pop like we've never popped it before. And in the American slang book, pop is basically a term for fornication or sex. And she also sings to a lot of young kids as well. Same with Christina Aguilera. She's got a lot of sexually explicit kind of music and lyrics. And here's just a lovely little quote from her, and it gives you insight about what they actually think of your children. She says, whatever I do, it's my business. It's not my job to parent America. But it is her job to get paid to basically corrupt your children. Responsible people, aren't they? Therefore, by their fruits you will know them. Matthew 7:20. This is a lovely tree because it's got beautiful fruits like love, faithfulness, goodness, kindness, self-control, gentleness. All these things that God tells us are the fruits of the Spirit. So, is there a message in this for all of us? You will know them by their fruits, I believe. Well, let's take a quick look and see what some of the fruits of this modern day music industry are. And we will see how Christian-like it really is. Ever since the 1960s big music and drug revolution, you could say, the statistics of where our society has actually gone is absolutely incredible. Because back in the days when chewing gum used to be a big problem in school, now kids are smoking, they're partying, they're sexually immoral, they're drinking at an incredibly young age. And you have all these children that are flocking to be like their favorite stars or their favorite idols. And here we have a few pictures of a few kids that are all wanting to be these famous stars that they see on TV. This industry has incredible control over children and youth. Here we have an interesting article from Time magazine where it says, "Children having children, teen pregnancy in America." Let's have a look at some of these fruits that occurred ever since the 1960s music revolution. Suicide rates are up 400%. Pregnancies between 10 to 14-year-olds up 553%. That's sick. Sexually transmitted diseases up 226%. Approximately 1 million teenage pregnancies each year in the US. Australia has become one of the highest teenage pregnancy and abortion rates. Divorce rates are up 111%. Violent crime rates are up 995%. And spiritism is one of the fastest growing religions in Australia. And that's basically paganism. These are your fruits from the music industry. So in conclusion, basically as you have seen in this modern day music industry, it is just as corrupt as the industry of old days. And just like in the old days, there are so many people that claim to be in the occult and claim to have sold their souls. So we are beginning to build this big picture that it's not just something in the past, that this today has even flourished even more. And we are just starting to see the fruits of the 1960s movement, which we will get more into later. James 4:4 says, "Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Whoever therefore wants to be friends of the world makes himself an enemy of God." The thing is, if we accept things from the world in our lives, and then we try to play the game where we can have a bit of the world here and that we can have a bit of God there. As we can see from this quote, from scripture, that God does not like that. He does not accept that as worship. If you have any form of friendship towards the world, it actually makes you an enemy of God. And that's something I don't wish upon anyone. So, if anyone here today has things, has items, where they believe that they have things in their lives which are actually holding them back from God, as we continue along our journey, I want you just to think about those things and ask yourself, do you really want to still keep those things in your life if you know it's going to make an enemy between you and God? You see, our God is a loving God. He doesn't want to push you away, but he knows if you have these things in your life, if you hold them as an idol, there's nothing he can do. So as we go along this journey through the music industry, I just want you to keep in the back of your minds, is there anything you want to surrender to God this day and get out of your life? Maybe even when you go home, take this thought with you, and if there's anything you see, make a commitment to God and tell him that you want to give it to him and get rid of it out of your life. Thank you very much.